Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, welcome. I hope you've had a happy Thanksgiving. Everybody
we
doing
did.
Okay?
Yes. Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving
Super.
As well.
Except for Emmy, and I know, you know, Emmy, are you with us, Emmy? Well, for when Emmy hears this recording, I made one of the dumbest mistakes that I recall making as a analyst or as a mentor coach. I have a client in London, and I meet with her twice a week, and we were rescheduling for the Thursday of last week. And I said, you know, I hope you have some nice Thanksgiving plans. And she said, we don't do Thanksgiving. And of all places, I said it to someone in England. I mean, come on. And I realized that. So, Emmy, you just had a free week off. So, well, I know Stephanie is going to do her roadmap today. Let's catch up with each of you. What are you up to? Where are you with the material, your practice? What kind of challenges do you have?
I'll jump in, Dave. It's Anne Marie.
Please, go ahead.
I have a little bit of an update, but I also have a question about what is versus isn't okay as far as what to do with the material. So I purchased the workbook, but the PDF version of the workbook for my own reference. And I have a client where I thought that these, and I've been working with her for a little while and haven't quite made as much progress with her as I know she would like, and I think a lot of it had to do with hanging on to old storylines. So I thought that this could be a great intervention in our relationship. And as I went through the workbook, so the pieces that are designed specifically for the client, as I understand it, right, it's a bit too complex for her. She needed something that was much more distilled down without losing the essence of what new life story is all about. So I started to create, kind of using bits and pieces, things that are, you know, more one or two page type of formats for her use, and just more from a simplicity and a just the type of client that she is. You know, how deep we want to go in some areas versus not in others. So it's working so far. Now, granted, we have not gotten very far, but I didn't know as far as licensing, et cetera, what you consider acceptable versus, you know, now that we're putting it to practice.
Okay. I think I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to answer what I heard, and if it's not, we'll go back. First of all, you should be getting a hard copy. I had my fulfillment house send you a hard copy just like a few days ago. So you should be getting it any day now, and that's my compliment, so that you'll get an idea of if you decide to work with clients using the hard copy, that's what can be co-branded. You can put your name and coaching firm on the cover, a new first page, and that sort of thing. And the PDF version is also accessible for clients to purchase, and I do a rebate to each of you for 40% for when they purchase it. But let me know so I'll know who, you know, how it happened, so I'll know to rebate you. Now, I think what you're describing is exactly what I had in mind. I think the workbook is simply a resource guide, and I don't think I would ever recommend more than an exercise or one work tool at a time, because I think it needs to be chunked down. And you know, the only time I've ever used the workbook in its entirety with people going through it and doing the exercises and the work tools have been the times that I have done coaching groups with people who have done this training with me, and that 28-week protocol is what I use with each weekly coaching session, a certain assignment, you know, two or three of the exercises that they do and then talk about them or something like that. So even that is chunked down, but it's more than one when people are familiar with the material already. So I would certainly recommend doing it that way. And what I had in mind initially, and still I think is a good use of it, and is to have the workbook for the client as a resource guide, but occasionally to make a recommendation about an exercise. Now, you'll find the client, I think, will begin to do some things they get curious about, and it'll be a catalyst for information. But if it's a single recommendation, a work page on a certain in a certain location in a certain module, it won't feel overwhelming to them, and it'll seem to fit because it can be designed to correspond with exactly the work you're doing. You know, an example is, and this is kind of the biggest one for me, is when I began with a client, many clients I began with, I want to get an idea of what their needs and ideals are, and I will assign them the needs and ideals. I will recommend that they do that, those two exercises, and be ready to give me or email me the first three, the top three needs and the top three ideals, and I put those in the cover, as I've mentioned before, of the that client's chart, so that I'm clear and the client is clear about needs and ideals that are going to fit then and be in synchrony with goals and strategy. So, yeah, I think it could be overwhelming if it's just a bunch of stuff. Now, does that address your question?
It does, for the most part. What I did. You know, rather than, so I guess in essence I did do, you know, and again, because I was working with the electronic version, is
how did you get that to the client?
What I did is I got it to me, first of all.
Yeah.
And because we're a little further in our journey, as I looked through it, I didn't feel comfortable sending that to the client. What I did, and you tell me if this is I cut and pasted pieces of it out, and I'm sending it in chunks in that way. So there's in a couple of instances, I swapped formats, so took the questions and actually made it into a little bit more of a linear table format and gave her space to write out the answers to her questions, going, you know, sort of going through the recognition of the, well, right now we're really very much in recognizing that you're the owner of the story, because she cannot,
what I've designed it to do, and what the license, and I probably need to send you guys sooner rather than later if you're already thinking about using it, the license agreement, the one of the things I send at the end of the training, the license agreement is that you will be licensed to use this material and the intellectual property with reference, and that you can co-brand the workbook. What I have in mind for, I mentioned already, if you do it in, you know, live time and hard copy, is to have all the workbooks or groups, say, sent to you, or you can put your, you know, I have my graphics person do a new cover so that you have your co-branded on the cover and have a new first page. What I have in mind for the PDF is, I don't have that for each. There's this one PDF workbook, and what I have in mind and what the license covers is, if you have a client that you're going to use that workbook with, that they order it, and then licensed of 40%, but they have it instead of you having it and giving it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it's designed.
Okay, that makes sense. To be honest with you, this client is she's my experimental client. She's been with me since the beginning of my journey, and I actually don't charge her, and she knows that I'd experiment on her, and she's totally okay with that. So in the future, when I have paying clients, I will absolutely follow that part of the process. That makes
great.
A lot of sense.
Okay, sure.
What it enabled for me, actually having it in my hand, I just got much more familiar with the flow of it. And
good.
So that's what you'll. I don't know if you'll ever see the order. You'll see one.
Copy, as my compliments, any day now.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Absolutely. Thanks. Other thoughts, questions, things to talk about. Check-ins. Anybody else want to say hi? Who else is here? Is Grace here?
This is Stephanie. I'm here.
Stephanie, go ahead. Well, bring us up to date. What's up? What's going on for you?
I just got back into town from Atlanta. Again, I apologize for missing those last two classes. I had no idea that I wasn't going to be able to log in. But I've been keeping up with the work and keeping up with the reading, and I've actually started implementing it in bits and pieces, so to speak, because, I wasn't real sure of the flow of it other than the case study flow that we have. But I've been implementing it in bits and pieces, and I'm just in awe with the way that it works. And I've actually had a couple of ideas that I've added to it that seem to work really well with the client. So I'm excited.
I'd be interested in your sharing the ideas at whatever time would be helpful or possible for you to do. I welcome each of you having any suggestions about revisions or shifts or anything. I have incorporated a number of changes and go through a wholesale revision periodically, but I welcome any revisions or updates or things that work better. Is there anything that you could share just in a succinct way, or does it take more time?
Oh, no. When I do my roadmap, when I read it out to you guys, I added the two things. I actually used it in my case study.
Okay.
So,
all right. That's great.
It's super easy to explain. Yeah.
Okay. Stephanie, are you on a speakerphone?
No, I have a headset on.
Oh, okay. That sounds
weird.
Sounds a little distant at times, like you were on a... I was just thinking about when you do your roadmap, if you can get closer to the receiver. So thanks for the update. Has Emmy joined us yet? What about Grace? Okay, anything else before Stephanie does her roadmap that would be helpful to talk about? Well, Stephanie, you're on whenever you're ready.
Okay. I wasn't exactly sure how to go about presenting, so I just put everything into the form that you sent us for the example case study, and I figured I would just read it.
Great.
Okay, so the case study that I did was on a client of mine named Lauren, and she is a successful professional woman. She's going through career, life, transition, and life and money story revision. The first step, recognizing authorship, was actually pretty difficult for her to even verbalize it, which I was sort of shocked about because we've talked about pretty heavy stuff together. But she said, after having worked with you for a few weeks, I am aware now that I am the author of my life story, my money story, and my success story. My thoughts, words, and emotions have created the life that I am currently living, and that is drowning me. I used to blame my lack of success as well as my self-esteem issues on outside things such as what my parents accomplished in their lives, my weight, my coworkers, etc. I realize now that I am the one who created this story. In regards to owning her story, she wrote, even though I'm crying and shaking as I do it, I am willing to own this horrible story that I have created and been living out. I acknowledge my current financial situation was created by me because I didn't know any better. I had a lack of awareness of any other options available to me. I also own that I am a procrastinator. and that I have set goals, most of which were unrealistic or had nothing to do with what I actually desired for my life, and that I did not follow through with those goals. I own that I have been financially irresponsible. I have spent money on unnecessary things in order to numb the pain and frustration that I've been feeling about my life. I also own that I have a very, as you would say, social, self-minded way of approaching things. I believe that I have to work hard for everything and that success and even love was only for certain people and that I wasn't one of those people. I am also willing to acknowledge that I have a great dependency on role definition and that that has ultimately caused a lot of my suffering, as well as my belief that I am unable to have the career and personal life that I desire simply because my parents don't have theirs. It is really hard for me to acknowledge and own that I have created and manifest this perfect storm that I am currently living out, but I do in fact own all of it nonetheless. In regards to assessing plot and storyline, she wrote, I have made good money throughout my life, but have spent it on unnecessary things, and I did so to numb the pain and disappointment that I was feeling, as well as to create the appearance that I was more successful than I actually was. It is important to me that people think I am successful and capable, and I realize now that the appearance of being so has outweighed actually being successful and capable. I allowed my student loans to go unpaid and didn't take any action on it because I was afraid and overwhelmed. I have not asked for help with my finances, launching my own business, finding love, or maintaining good relationships because I was afraid that people would judge me for not knowing how to do it on my own. I have tried to save money in the past and would always end up spending it on other things that were not in alignment with my vision or desires for my life. I have stayed at a job that I hate because my parents keep telling me that I need to just deal with the stress because I make good money and have great benefits. They continuously tell me that starting my own business is too risky and that I just need to suck it up and stay at my current job, and I have voluntarily done so even though I know this job is not ultimately what I want to do with my life. I have allowed my parents' fears to become my fears. I acknowledge that I knew a few things that needed to change in my life in order for me to have the life that I desire, but I never followed through with making those changes. It is really painful for me to admit and acknowledge this, but I realize now that I have always lived my life with the thought that if I didn't pay my bills or save money or could not pay my mortgage, that my parents would be there to bail me out. I was taught a poverty mentality by watching my grandmother stockpile groceries, paper goods, etc. She used to tell me that she needed to have all of these things saved up because what if she didn't have money for them in the future? I learned to fear money and more specifically not having money, and I just adopted that as my story, even though it wasn't my story. It was my parents and grandparents. I have believed that it was impossible for me to actually become a millionaire or to own my own successful business because nobody around me has accomplished it. Another realization is that family members used to tease me about being so smart and well-spoken and doing well in school. It seemed to me to be a bad thing, so I made myself small and to allow others to feel better about themselves and have continued to do that in my adult life. Because I saw so much divorce and so many dysfunctional relationships, I believed that it was impossible for me to have a successful relationship. I also realized that I discounted my accomplishments in order to make the men that I was with feel okay about their lack of accomplishments. Again, I made myself small in order for someone else to feel big. I have not used good financial or personal examples or confidants in my life. Deciding what to change. She wrote, I am keeping my creative spirit, my passion, and my belief that these things are in fact possible for me. I am keeping my ability to do great work and earn great money. I am keeping my vision, my desire to achieve great things. I am keeping you as my life coach, and I am keeping my therapist. I am keeping my desire to be financially stable and free. I am keeping my ability to save and invest money wisely. I am keeping my desire to start my own coaching business. I am keeping my role as the creator and author of my life. I am letting go of making myself small so that others can feel big, emotional spending, taking on new debt, not managing or checking in with my finances, ignoring bills, my fear of being successful, the poverty mentality, doing for others when it puts me in a bad position emotionally or financially, maintaining the appearance of success, aka keeping up with the Joneses. I am letting go of the examples and advisors that I have that have not been working, and I am letting go of the fear of failure and the fear of success. I am also letting go of not believing in myself or thinking that I am not deserving of good things. I am letting go of this job. I am letting go of fear and my fear that people, namely my parents, will not be happy with my choices. So in addition to this portion of the work, I asked my clients to create a must change list that will be broken up into four quarters over the next year. My explanation to her of what a must change list is are the things, actions, thoughts, behaviors, circumstances that must change in order for her to be able to materialize the ideal life that she's now creating. Under map changes, she wrote, starting from where I am with what I have, I'm going to take all the necessary steps to become a life coach and start my own coaching practice, beginning with getting my certification. I'm going to get a mentor coach. I'm going to use a new budgeting tool where I can keep track of what I'm bringing in and what I'm spending. The tool that I have chosen is mint.com. I'm going to say my positive affirmations every day in order to help renew my mind to be in alignment with my new life story. I'm going to begin a new meditation practice. I'm going to use Twitter, Instagram, Periscope, and Facebook to market my new coaching practice. I will get new clients that way as well. I'm going to start making YouTube videos to connect with people. I'm going to tell my parents that I am a life coach and not a corporate manager. And I'm going to live in that new truth no matter how uncomfortable any of us are with it. I am going to start saying no when I want or need to. I'm going to move my body more. I'm going to sign up for online dating. I am going to be more available. I am going to organize my home by throwing out old paperwork, giving away things that are no longer serving me or that I am no longer using, and keeping my home clean and organized. I'm going to be grateful for the money and opportunity that my current job provides me instead of letting it stress me out. I am going to follow through with my ideas so that I will create multiple sources of income. I am setting a new realistic saving plan for myself, and I'm going to set a deadline for when I will quit my job and become a full-time practicing life coach. I'm going to be accountable for all of my actions moving forward. Again, in addition to this work, I have my client create what I call a list of intentions, and these intentions will be broken up evenly into four quarters over the next year. I explained to her that an intention is not a to-do list or a should list. I should be doing these things. But an intention is a seed that's born within that's directly connected to her new vision and her new stories. Author, new experiences. I had her write what is called a new life vision. And she wrote, I am a loving, devoted wife and mother, a successful, top-ranked national life coach, forever changing the lives of those I interact with for the better. I am active in my community with various charities, and my talents, faith, and perseverance have allowed me to create and manifest a multi-million dollar estate that comes from multiple streams of income. In my downtime, I enjoy a regular fitness routine, traveling the world, mentoring young women who desire to become entrepreneurs, and spending time overlooking the ocean in my second home in Jamaica. I am happy, healthy, and well-balanced, and I have set a new standard for what is possible for my family and for others. In addition to this work, I asked my client to create a four-word mantra that she could easily memorize and that would be easily accessible to her throughout the day to help remind her of her goals and to reinforce her new life story. And the words that she chose were freedom, expansion, passion, and divine connection. Program experiences and identity. I am a person who is aware that I am the author of my story. I will become financially responsible by educating myself via my life coach, reading books, and attending seminars. I will begin to love myself by acknowledging all of my strengths and assets and further deepening my positive outlook by using affirmations, visualization, and living as if I already am everything I desire to become. I will meet with my life coach and therapist on a consistent basis, and I will ask them for quarterly progress reports. I will be a person who is comfortable in their own skin and with their successes and I will learn from any failure that may happen. I will remain aware that every choice I make has an equal manifestation. When I choose positive things, I will reap positive benefits. When I make unhealthy or negative choices, I will reap negative or unhealthy outcomes. I will be a person who feels empowered when I love and am loved, and I will remind myself that in order to really live and love, I have to be willing to take the good and the bad that comes along with life. I will be a person who knows that there is freedom in saving money and spending money as well, and that I am always being provided for. I will be a person whose ideas generate positive changes and millions of dollars. I will identify with and give power to my new story. I am a person who believes in my power and ability to create and manifest my ideal life. I will be a person who is an effective goal setter, and I will be a person whose stock is constantly rising. I will be a life coach who will live what I teach. And that was it.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to clarify. I'm not sure I'm clear. Now, is that your ongoing client who filled that out?
Yes, we worked on it together. Like, I gave her a step-by-step thing. I explained.
Okay, what was she looking at when she filled out that with all those all that material?
I copy and pasted the explanations that you gave, recognizing authorship.
Oh, okay,
so the R, the O, the A, yeah.
Okay. Okay. How far along into coaching are you with her?
With her? She's been my client on and off for about a year. She's only been consistent for the last 4 months.
I was a little confused when she said, I'm going to get a mentor coach. I thought you said you are her mentor coach.
I'm her life coach. She means somebody that's going to, and I explained to her after I read this and we talked about it, I explained to her that I could add that into her regular coaching. She just assumed because I'm her life coach that I could not also mentor her.
Like for her coaching practice?
Like for her coaching practice, like to teach her how to set
okay.
it up and, you know,
yeah.
whatever questions she has and so forth.
That's why I call myself a mentor coach, so I can get away with doing whatever I need to do to help the client advance. And,
I
coach a lot of professionals
yeah.
who are coaches, and, you know, some of it may be about the business and the various aspects of developing a practice. And, you know, and that makes it, I think whatever it takes to help a client reach their goal. So
yeah.
How do you, can you, in just a sentence or two, assess what you hear in that roadmap and predict the biggest challenge that you'll have with this client?
What I hear from her is a realization that things are not happening to her, but that she is making things happen, or she's adopting thoughts or patterns of behavior that she's seen since she was a kid. And I don't know that she really recognized that before. She was what I call a blamer. So everything was everybody else's fault, and stuff just always happened to her.
Well,
and I feel
that time that manifests, you can simply hit pause and look at that with her as she's constructing the story.
Mm-hmm.
See, it seems to me that you have someone who fills the pages with a lot of words, but may have difficulty shrinking the change into a tangible next step, because all of those things that she talks about are at a level of abstraction and would be overwhelming to try to do. Or especially to figure out, okay, what do I do the next hour? And what do I do tomorrow morning? And how do I prioritize and decide this? So one suggestion about this is when she began and said, I'm a procrastinator. Now, the reason that I have an agreement with each client, that we can interrupt each other, is that's exactly where I would begin, because that's about the choice architecture. If someone calls themselves a certain behavior or habit that they've repeated, it's going to make it harder to change. So I would deconstruct that right there and look at if she gets to a specific step, and the next step is to begin the very specific tangible next step that she's decided to do, that's part of her goal, and she doesn't do it, then that's a choice, and I want to look at that choice with her and look at that in terms of what is it that she's afraid of to decide not to take the step. And what would be the greater fear, the greater pain? What's the pain if she takes that step that she's backing away from it? And what's the greater pain if she doesn't take it? What's the greater pleasure if she does? Because at each juncture, every time we take a step forward or don't take a step forward and have a plan, if we have a plan and don't move into it or don't take that next step, it's almost always some pain that somebody anticipates. That may be the pain of change. It may be not knowing what the outcome is going to be. It may be it's easier to go to the mall. Whatever it is, it's the pain of that immediate step and that change that someone has, and that's the shadow story that's stopping them in their tracks. Mm-hmm. And I would look at that specific step. So some questions for her, and I think you're going to have to help her get way less abstract and to move into tangible, specific steps to pick one thing that she can get some traction on and that you and she can track to use as a model. Because I'd be overwhelmed with all that stuff she's talking about. And here's an example of that. If she says, well, what I want is, and whatever that is, then I would ask, what would I be able to observe in your behavior today to know that? What behavior would demonstrate that you are acting to do that? And is there a component of that that you could begin doing right now to get some traction? Or what's the most important piece of new behavior to establish in order to move forward?
Okay. Maybe this is my fault,
What is your fault that you're referring to now? I'm not clear.
Well, I guess because I'm hearing what you're saying, and I've begun implementing those things with her, and like for example, setting up the bigger vision. What's your new overall story? And then saying what are things that you're willing to commit to, and then breaking that up into quarterly goals, and then breaking those quarters up into her biweekly sessions, and giving her work that is in alignment with the goal for that particular week. And then her having
to come
back. I totally
agree with everything you're saying, except giving her, she needs to generate that work instead of you give her that work. It all has to come from her and be her commitment because that's her story.
Okay.
I wouldn't suggest giving her any work, but generating from her what that work is going to be. And I think it's great. I think it's a really, really interesting roadmap, and I'm just using it, you know, to look at some aspects of that for all of us to think about. So there's nothing the matter with it. I think it's terrific. I'm just picking out certain aspects that I hear that I think may be most productive and most challenging with someone like this in case it's useful to you and to all of us.
Okay.
Now, let me ask, other responses to this roadmap?
I am, Stephanie, I think you and I have a very similar client. The client that I mentioned earlier, Dave, that I'm using this with, that's been a very similar path as well. There's just been a lot of vague ambiguity in a lot of places. Where I'm using this tool, the first thing we did before this tool is actually in the work that we've done and some of the story rewriting that we've started to do is, we created a map first of where are all of the places where she feels overwhelmed. She calls it chaos. So really we just chunked it more into what are the things she's trying to do, the goals that she's trying to achieve. And then from there, I asked her to pick one that will either have the most impact or, you know, so again, this idea of the shrinking the change, pick one area where she either felt the strongest, she felt it would have the most impact on her life, or maybe it was even the easiest and she was looking for a quick win. That's the sort of guidance I gave her. And it's in that area that we are now doing, using the roadmap in its more of its structure.
I think that's very wise, to shrink the change and to look at what's next. And you move from a smart goal to initiatives to get there, and
yeah.
with a timetable, and then the next best action for each initiative. So you kind of ladder the progress. So
yeah,
I think
and
that's
I,
a very useful way to do that.
And there were storylines. There's a different, in some places, or in many of them, there's a different storyline going from one to the next that's holding her back. So what it enabled me to do is say, all right, let's really focus on what's the barrier? What's the storyline, the belief, the assumption that's really, really kind of has you by the neck in this
How
one?
Does
and it may
she
be
stop herself?
Yes. Yeah, and it helped me because otherwise my head was spinning. I did not know what question to ask next. I didn't know where to start.
Yeah, well, I think those are some great observations from both of you, and I appreciate that. Because of time, I want to move on. But, Stephanie, was it helpful for you to do that, and was this discussion helpful at all for you?
It was. I will take everything under advisement and apply it.
I think you have a hardworking client there, and I think, you know, your very active participation as a mentor coach is going to be useful for her in immense ways. It's going to make some major difference for her for the rest of your life and for Anne Marie's client as well.
Thank you. And thank you for your feedback, Anne Marie and Dave, as well.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Good luck.
That with us. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we can do a progress note down the pike about what's
yeah.
happening with her.
Yeah. I'd love to hear it, and I'd love to share if this is, you know, helping my client get a little bit further as well.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about a career story. Each of you, I believe, is uniquely positioned to help a client navigate a career assessment and change, if that's part of it. And each of us is going through or has gone through a career change. It's a familiar experience, and some of you are in the middle of it now. As we discuss aspects of a new career story, reflect on your own experiences of transition to professional coaching. Now, first, I want to share some thoughts about passion and flow, and then roadmap a new career story, just as a overview of that. And then I want to discuss some aspects of your coaching practice and marketing, because this is maybe the best place to discuss it. So have any questions in mind that you have about the business or the marketing aspect of your practice, because I want to hit on a few, but then see what your thoughts are. First, passion. Every success story is a love story. Bob Costas on Tim Russert's death captured his passion and his infectious enthusiasm. Costas said, he told me once, Bob, I don't want to be any place but here when I'm not with family. All truly successful people live in alignment with their passions. They're fulfilling their purpose in life, living their dreams. Rick Miller's research on the key to happiness and peace of mind in his book Massive Success studied the secret of the world's wealthiest people to become successful. They may not know themselves. They may be caught up in what they do each day and be unaware of the elements of exactly how they become successful, but they have discovered their why. They have aligned their purpose with their passions. The famous theologian William Barclay said, there are two great days in a person's life, the day we were born and the day we discover why. Consider the inverse of that. The number one reason people don't get what they want is they don't know what they want. Let's talk a little bit about flow. Flow is a state of heightened focus, productivity, and happiness. The ability to create flow is to be more productive and satisfied at work and can often offer significant advantages. Flow is simply a positive state of mind. It's one of the states that's been studied in the last couple of decades that contributes so much to effectiveness and performance, especially in the area of positive psychology. Flow, from another perspective, is a state of mind of being centered and focused without distraction. This state of mind allows full immersion in the process of concentration and performance that creates superior results. In the state of mind of flow, people engage so fully in what they do that they may even lose track of time. And you've probably had that experience. The experience becomes its own reward, a way of countering distraction and becoming immersed in purpose. Now, one way to think about this is to roadmap a new career story. And let's discuss it from the perspective of working with clients, and we'll talk about a roadmap that could apply to a career transition of any sort. First, recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line? Clearly describe your career story as it exists now. Then describe what you want in your new career story. If someone wants to make a career change, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone's only performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that their job or career is not rewarding, and decide to move on, they don't have the full information needed. They can't make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. To do an apples-to-apples comparison, they would have to operate at 100% capacity in their current career to contrast it with the anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career. It's likely that the same process that resulted in a ceiling, for example, at 80% would be repeated in the new situation. So, a question here. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? Now, amazingly to me, every client I've ever asked this to immediately comes up with a figure. They don't think about it. They don't, you know, give me a rank. They will immediately say 75% or 60% or 85%. They will immediately know. So if it's not 100%, explore why. That's your immediate coachable moment. Have you ever performed at 100% of your capacity? Do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current or past position so that you can make an informed decision? Here's a brief story to illustrate an aspect of that. At the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time, when I was on the faculty of Baylor College of Medicine right out of residency, I served as a consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research. That's the place that that Representative Gabby from Arizona came after she was shot and spent months working with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, often as a result of an accident. Not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime disability. Instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. Suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially when fundamental body control was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment in time, the idea of suicide, of being able to control one thing in their lives, to know that they could end the pain, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. I recommended that we work together to achieve their full capacity now, realizing that it would be at a different level since the onset of their physical challenge. Only achieving their full potential at their new level could they make an informed decision about whether they wanted truly to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. I told them that I would entirely understand if, after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that decision. I worked with several hundred people over a period of 5 years in the small portion of my professional time I did this. No one, thankfully, decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new, though different, level of function. Next step, own your needs and ideals regarding career. Be clear about needs and ideals, if and how they align with passion and experience. When your passion and expertise combine, terrific possibilities emerge. So a question is here, what do you want in your career? And listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going toward something, or rarely both. distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. And here, be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or a slow period with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, someone may have to realign or recommit to their career. Because keeping in mind, to choose the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if you chose the wrong career then. One client spoke of a particular storyline that she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself, to money, or the things that money bought, but she was addicted, as she said, to the pursuit of perfection, to her work ethic. More became a goal, more money, more work. The story of the pursuit of money simply was a metric, a way of a yardstick that had become a substitute for other stories. But the ideal of more, of course, lacked an endpoint. So her self-esteem was never validated. Being perfect is to not have an endpoint. More is to not have an endpoint. I'll come back to her in just a moment. Next step, assess what is present and what is missing in the current career. What information do you need? You may need to research new information regarding personal skills, abilities, aptitudes. A couple of questions here. What would your life and career be like if you already had what you wanted? And what is it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? And here it can be important to distinguish internal dissatisfaction from job dissatisfaction. Internal struggles and unhappiness are too easily blamed on a job or a marriage. People want to change the obvious cause, something they can tangibly focus on rather than look inside. Sometimes people even create job-related struggles to externalize happiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or to pose a recognizable remedy. Then the supposed way to get rid of the problem is simply leave it. Next step, decide on a plan and how to make it work. So a question here would be, how would working with me get you where you want to be? Now, back to that client. I noticed a pattern that as soon as she was really enjoying her work, she was a specialty physician and had a booming practice with a dozen professionals and paraprofessionals over whom she was in charge, and it was her practice. As soon as she began really enjoying her work, really immersed in it, she began procrastinating. She would put off completing work, which restored her old feeling of dread and vague guilt about what she should be doing. She hadn't recognized that pattern, consciously at least. When I pointed it out, it prompted her insight. She said, well, yeah, because work always needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, I began to feel vaguely guilty because I should be working, so I would focus on something that I wasn't doing so I could get back on the treadmill. So one possibility here may be to create a vision. We heard that from Stephanie's client. Create a vision of success at your specific goals. There's a chapter in the book that I'm going to be sending you just in the next day or two. It's the revision is complete. It's called Outsmart Your Brain, an Instruction Manual. And there's a chapter on the way to construct a vision and to look at affirmations that are the story to support your vision. So that's a chapter in there you might find it helpful with certain clients. Map your plan. Where, when, how to begin. SMART goals, incentives, next best action. Now, here's an example of some research that validates the importance, the impact of having a specific goal. Now, it's not research from a white coat sterile medical laboratory. The image of a black house fly was etched into each urinal at the Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. The theory that while men may not pay attention to where they aim, if they have a specific target, a goal, they'll focus more specifically. The theory of the originator, Ad Kibum, proved correct. It reduced spillage 80%. Now, this is a goofy example, but it's an illustration of how choice architecture is an art and a science. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions, nudged by themselves and by setting goals. We are susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are unhealthy, uneconomical, and short-sighted. When we consider how people think, we can design environments of choice that make it easier for people actually to pick better options. Next step, author changes. Implement the plan and reach your goal. Now, someone needs the correct paradigm. Changing careers means changing paradigms. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present situation would apply to a new career. You just change the setting. And this is an example from a client of mine. If you go from head of HR from one multinational oil company to another in the same city, the culture is still worlds apart. The correct paradigm is not only about the process, but the content of the new career, as well as the process of change. An entirely different system, even though the name and the function and the title was the same. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined for correctness. Here's a very simple and practical example. In making a transition from medical practice to coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to teach, to occasionally present a paper or write a book. My secretary would take the calls and put patients on the schedule or the waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. Marketing is a world of difference. And those of you who have been doing that experience that. My mentor coach drugged me kicking and screaming into marketing. So one question here, who else needs to be involved in your plan? And last step, program new experiences to then incorporate them into your identity. Considerations of a career need to be in conjunction with developmental phases of the individual within that career, as well as where that person is in life development. In other words, life development, the individual's own development, and the developmental phase of the career all are considerations because they're all coming to bear on the decisions. Here's how one transformation sounds. This is from Julia Cameron in her book, The Artist's Way. I'm astounded I could let go of the drama of being a suffering artist. Nothing dies harder than a bad idea. So the process of coaching with your clients will give you information and parallel other processes. In other words, someone's always teaching you what it's like to be them. If a client is stuck in coaching, they're stuck in their life or their business. Where they're stuck in coaching will reveal where they're stuck in their life or business. If they don't fill out the paperwork in coaching, look to see if they're filling out the paperwork in their life. If they don't pay in coaching, look for the parallel process. If someone is frustrating to you, look at how they're teaching others as well as you how to respond to them in that particular way. A couple of things I want to mention that I think are important in coaching a new story, and since they relate to career, I'm including them here. One is diagnosis bias. The moment we label a person or situation, we then seek data to support that diagnosis more vigorously than data to contradict it. This bias includes blindness to all evidence that may contradict that assessment of a person or situation. So a diagnosis bias is a mental shortcut in making decisions. It's an illustration of how we construct meaning for our experiences. We organize and simplify by using shortcuts. So usually, it's helpful, it's efficient, it's parsimonious and adaptive. Once we conclude something and label it, we don't have to go through that whole process each time. And once the shortcut of the label is there, it's the prompt, we boot up a whole mindset that is geared toward specific responses. But once it's there, we don't notice things that may be outside the scope of this decision. We have a confirmation bias, and we have an inattentional bias. We want to confirm our theories, our diagnosis, and we don't really give much attention to things that dispute it. And we're not even aware at times of what we may be overlooking. Now, here's a study that illustrates that. This is called the blind date. Psychologist Franz Epting devised a study to set up a blind date with a prior description of that person. A mutual friend describes the date as smart, funny, and interesting. If she says then to the volunteer who's been told the story, if she says her plans for the weekend are, well, what I do every weekend, stay home and read Hegel. The most common response was an appreciation of her intellect and a deadpan sense of humor. Now, if the friend, though, described to another group the date as smart, serious, and interesting, same comment, but it's more likely interpreted as, how much Hegel can one person read? Or one person's comment captured the trend. Well, I ended up racking my brain about the difference between Heidegger and Hegel, and I had to leave before dessert. The description simply of smart, funny, and interesting versus smart, serious, and interesting determined the subsequent perception. So value attribution is how we tend to imbue a person or a thing with certain qualities based on our beliefs or the initial perceived value. It's the role of assumption in action. Here's a good example. Two economists, Barry Staw and Ha Huang, studied skill categories and statistics of new NBA players. They studied them for 5 years, divided into three skill measuring categories: scoring, quickness, and toughness. They looked at all the variables that determine playing times in game: skill categories, performance, injury, or trade status. But there was one variable for the first 5 years of someone's entry into the NBA that had greater impact than any of all of these performance data. It was the player's draft selection order. In fact, draft order was more highly correlated with playing time throughout the first 5 years, which was the time they did the study. Even though skill and performance determines a draft order, once picked, coaches and managers should only be interested in the player's performance. In other words, once the draft is over, the draft number is history, and performance is everything. Well, not so, says value attribution. Now, let's move this to your coaching practice. Remember, you're not selling anything. You're offering value and benefit. There are two factors necessary to make coaching work. Your client is willing to grow. There's a gap between where the client is now and where they want to be. So a coaching engagement can be crystallized by focusing on one or both of these issues. What's the biggest challenge that you're facing now? Where ideally would you like to be a year from now? When you bring value, rather than selling and asking for the sale or closing the sale or even asking for their business or thinking about it that way, as a professional, you make a recommendation. Think of other professions and professionals. Your physician, your dentist, your CPA, your financial consultant, your attorney. You consult with them about an issue. They ask you some questions, and then they make a recommendation. You then choose to follow it or not. Same in my view with coaching. You listen to a client, ask some questions, and make a specific recommendation of how to work, the frequency, and what's involved. This includes your fee and when to pay the fee in two or three simple sentences. Now, this consistently comes up as I mentor coaches and other professionals, so I wanted to briefly mention it. There's a formula for determining your coaching fee. There are only three variables when you think about it in this regard: your yearly income, the number of clients, in your fee. Let's make it simple for the purposes of this equation to say you're only doing individual coaching. I mean, this will make the calculation simple. And now we know that there are ways to leverage your time and your impact and your income by doing group coaching, by doing facilitation, by doing workshops, retreats, all kinds of things. But simply, here we'll consider one-to-one. Now, pick any two of these three, yearly income, number of clients, or fee, that are most important variables for you personally and professionally, and calculate the third. For example, to determine the amount of your fee, if you decide you want to make $200,000 a year in your coaching practice and that you want to work 11 months a year and you want to see 15 clients each month on a weekly basis, then the calculation would be that you need to charge each client a monthly retainer of $1,215. Now, there are a lot of additional services that you can offer, as I mentioned. But you can create a tangible process for your coaching practice, such as, an example is the 28-session template that you have an outline for. And that can be a template if you use it, for example, for group or individual. Now, I want to look, and we can come back to any one of these that you'd like, and I want to be sure we allow time for that. Your business is a story. Every professional relationship becomes part of that story arc of development. Storytelling excellence is not something you just pick up along the way. It's an art, a craft, a discipline to be mastered. And a story, in my view, is a useful way to think of your business. What's the story of your business? Are the benefits clear? What's the story of your teleseminar? Is it effective? Is it exciting? Is it promising? Whoever has the best story wins. Nobel laureate Daniel Kahneman finds that our memories are very selective. And I recently heard him present the findings I'm about to share with you. Specifically, no matter how extended an event, whether that was a party, a commercial transaction, a presentation, any encounter, we form our views, make our evaluations, and create a memory based on two primary things, the most emotionally intense moments and the final moments. The final moments are particularly important in making a memory or just in assessing, because after an extended presentation or dinner party, we're likely to remember the few words or the brief exchange at the end. He gave an example of how he attended a terrific symphony. And for 45 minutes, it was a blissfully, beautifully done symphony. And at intermission, he noticed that all that people were talking about was right at the very end, just for a second, there was a screech of one violin. And he was intrigued with the idea that that's what people were talking about, what they were taking away and remembering and having conversation about, not the 45 minutes of this wonderful symphony, but the 1 second at the very end that retrospectively reviewed for each of them the entire experience. So plan your story all the way through the end. Make your story memorable, compelling, emotionally engaging. Consider your last impression. Beginnings matter. It creates a state of mind. Endings matter. It solidifies the memory. Now, think about your brand of your coaching business. The brand is the identity, the personality of a product or business, the essence of your business story. And a brand is a valuable element of the identity of the business as well as for marketing. It's an emblem of the impressions of a product or company. It's a metaphor for expectations. And now a brand is your internal organizer for everything that you do. It's not something you're going to convey. It's not something you're going to say outright to a client or say on a website. But it's an organizer for everything you do in every connection with potential client or readers, because your brand is going to convey and trigger meaning and connections and carries its own brand. Consider this. What's the opposite of a brand? answer is generic. Our clients and potential clients consciously and unconsciously take notes on how we brand and value ourselves, how we charge what we're worth, the confidence we have in making a recommendation and stating a fee, how we handle the business of coaching. How we handle this will determine if we have clients and how successful we and they will be. So there are a number of things that that I think can be important to talk about, but I want to get your ideas. I want to just conclude with something here and then get your ideas about what would be most helpful for us to talk about. Here are some principles related to career that I wanted to mention because they're related in that they all fit together in the sense of talking about career. One, time is not an adequate measure of hard work. Two, hard work is not an adequate measure of performance or success. Three, a work ethic is not the same as a productivity or success ethic. Four, if possible, delegate everything other than what you do uniquely well, even the things you do exceptionally well. Time management is not energy management. Number five, time management is energy management. Six, stress regulation is energy management. Seven, follow your passion. Eight, know your optimum state of mind, your zone, to accomplish each specific task. Know how to enter your optimum state of mind, how to get to that zone, and to match it to the task. When your passion and your expertise combine, deciding possibilities occur. And finally, structure gives you freedom. I think this is applicable about structure giving you freedom for both of the clients we heard about today from Marianne and Stephanie. So your thoughts and questions and what would be helpful to talk about any aspect of this or especially the business and marketing, because I know we don't spend a whole lot of time on that, but I want to be sure that we talk about everything that could be useful to your coaching firm and business.
Dave, I'll jump in. The marketing and branding portion of the business is one area where I have had to continuously rewrite some of my own stories. I'm an engineer by education, and that's the world I lived in for 20 years from a corporate standpoint. So I had to really break through.
Yeah.
A lot of paradigms, and one of those was, from a process standpoint, that the first thing that you have out of the gate is the best thing or the last thing. Where I was from a niche definition and where I was from a branding, I was initially paralyzed because I was looking at it as the first few things I needed to, or the first things I did would be the final thing, the final brand name or the final niche that I wanted to have. And it took me, I didn't realize then that I was rewriting the story, but it took, and this is where my mentor coach came in, very helpful. But I just wanted to kind of reiterate that those areas as coaches are really places that we can use this tool to challenge ourselves to, build our businesses and get our businesses successful, and really looking inside to see what beliefs and what assumptions are holding us back. As much as we try to challenge our clients with that, really looking at, I had this belief where I didn't like marketing, or I didn't think I was good at marketing. And instead I just found the places now that I do like, and the pieces of it that do work for me and that feel more authentic. But this has been a huge learning curve for me.
It was something that, as I mentioned, I needed to do as well. I think your comments are very, very important, because it's not something coming from your background or my background. It came naturally. And one of the last things, one of the last pieces of work that I put together was to look at all of what we know from the perspective of mind and brain sciences applied to the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, and neuromarketing, and what's going to be applicable to coaching in that regard. And let me just mention a landing page, because I would submit it's an example of a way that has worked for me, and I'll tell you specifically how, in terms of presenting a product. Because it's the same kind of process of looking at how to think about developing a practice, in that you begin with the pain points or the challenges of the individual, whether that's an individual or group, and then look at the benefits that can be for each of those. And the landing page I'm about to give you, there are, I believe, 6 bullets of challenges or pinpoint issues. And that comes from listening to a couple of thousand coaches I've trained, because it's about developing a practice, the marketing and the business aspects of the practice. And then the following 6 bullets are matched one for one, bullet for bullet, with the benefits that someone gets by subscribing to this teleseminar. And when I first did this series, I did it a couple of times because I wanted, actually 3 times, I think, and because I wanted to develop it and move it to a more specific product like CDs and a workbook. And then when I did it the last time, I realized that I had not used the principles that I had done 2 or 3 years of research to put this thing together. I had not used the principles to market this piece itself. And when I revised it and used the principles that I learned that you see in the final landing page of this site, it increased my subscribership 8-fold from the combination of the first 3. So it really worked. And here's the site. It's www.mentorpath.com/massive success, just MASSIVESUCCESS, I'm offering it as an example of a way to think about that. So thanks for mentioning that, and I totally agree with you about how we have to move into an area to do things we may not want to do or may not be comfortable certainly in doing in terms of developing a practice. Other comments or questions or things that would be helpful to talk about? Or was there anything else about that, Anne-Marie, that you wanted to mention?
No, you have my wheels turning, because I feel like this is still very much a work in progress for me. And each day I feel like I get new tools and new insights to tackle it.
I think it's for all of us, and that's an aspect that if we give a portion, it doesn't have to be a big portion, but if we constantly give one portion of our time, maybe even 5 or 10% for marketing aspects, then we won't have the roller coaster of when we get full, then we kind of back off and don't do anything, and then there's a slump, and then we get all active and do stuff, and then it goes up again. This can be a more constant. And the key for me was finding a way to enjoy doing it. And that teleseminar that I just referred to, the landing page, is a good example of how I finally found a way to enjoy doing it, of putting together information for myself and other people whose work I knew and had trained that could be beneficial for them. So it became the same kind of joy of a creative endeavor as other things that I'd done and totally enjoyed. So the key, I mean, my favorite grandmother had it right. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So the key for me was finding a way to have fun doing it.
That's one of my favorite quotes that you've ever shared.
Yeah.
I do have one question, whether it's in the context of a career story or any other story that we're and I'm happy to pick it up next week if time is tight. I'm curious if in the process that, I kind of see ROA as being very much this is where you are now
you know, you're the central character, let's build accountability and assess where you are. The decide and map is really the bridge over to the new world, which I look at as author and program. Have you ever had a client go through author and program as a means of sort of creating the vision, where an initial vision, and then going back to decide and map? So almost getting, helping them to see where they want to be and what's possible, the ideal, before even doing the, before even asking them to decide and map.
I'm not quite clear when you say program. Tell me, can you ask me that in just a single sentence? Because I'm not really clear about what it is.
Have you ever had a client author and program, do the thinking behind authoring and programming before ever going through the deciding and mapping portions? So thinking and having them jump to the new, the ideal, where they want to be, before ever talking about how might you get there?
Yes, I think it happens
okay. Both
ways. I think change happens from the outside in, and I think change happens from the outside, from, you know, both ways, inside out and outside in. Changes that people experience, you know, life, birth, death, job loss, all that have to be adapted to, things that are unpredictable, as well as an internal change, and somebody can begin to create what they want and then look at and see the need to crystallize a more specific plan. Because usually when you begin to see somebody in work, they've been stuck, but they are stuck, and why now is often because they really see the need to move ahead, and they may have tried to move ahead. They may be successful in some areas, not in others. So I think it goes back and forth. And the roadmap is not a linear progression. I was reluctant to present it because it's not just, you know, a linear progression. It's a way that we can conceptualize how to listen to a story, but it's certainly not going to be the experience of the client going through it.
Yeah,
and
like
at any moment,
that's good.
They may not know where in the process they are in this.
That's good.
I believe it's not clear.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's clear.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to have to stop here. Thanks, and that's a good question. I hadn't heard it asked that way, and it totally makes sense.
Well,
so
I'm an engineer.
We'll pick up right here at the time.
Great, Dave. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Bye, Stephanie.
Bye, you guys. Thank you.